From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
This Monday morning edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast, Chase Palm, Neil McCready, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio, starting another work week, also starting the recruiting dead period. No in-person contact for coaches and recruits until January 12th, 25 days of unlimited phone calls, but no face-to-face as the early signing period is a couple days away.
But it wait, I thought I saw someone tweet yesterday that you're limited to one phone call per day.
I thought it was unlimited.
I did too.
Yeah.
But now that you say that, there was a tweet yesterday that implied coaches were limited to one phone call per day.
During the dead period.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was, I'm pretty sure it's unlimited. I think I know the account you're looking at. You want to check it out real quick?
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Okay. While we're doing that, thanks for allowing us to take a little hiatus on Friday as I was getting some, actually a lot of medical attention trying to solve the headaches and the pain that I have in my neck. No metaphor or anything there, just actually a pain in my neck at the base of my skull. So hopefully got a little answers there. Hope you had a good weekend. Ole Miss basketball falls to help me.
5-5.
5-5 on the season. After losing another overtime game, that is becoming quite the trend, if you will, as they've lost
three,
several now.
Three non-conference home overtime losses.
That's a problem.
South Dakota State.
Virginia Tech. And
Illinois State.
So
that's an issue.
That is an issue. And that's we'll talk about that a little bit today. 10 thoughts up on the site. A lot of recruiting. Tons of recruiting. Russell Johnson doing a fabulous job with the recruiting there at rebelgrove.com. I talked to Mets manager Mickey Callaway on Friday. That is up on the site as well. Hopefully we'll get Mickey on the podcast this week also. So that and more at rebelgrove.com. And the podcast brought to you by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. You got a couple more days to go and let them smoke your ham or turkey for your Christmas dinner. As little as $15, they prepare it. Take that from you, or you can concentrate on other things this holiday season. Also, 49-cent bottomless refills at the Oxford Exxon and any Blue Sky location in Mississippi. And again, coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
We are Clark Ford's in Amory, 662-257-1900 is the number. You call that number. You ask for our friend Corey Clark. You tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for, and then Corey will send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's so simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. It's just a great deal from the very get-go. And then it's up to you. It's the Christmas. It's the last week of the Christmas shopping season. You can be totally in the shopping mood, and you can go shop your quote, or you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of this podcast and our family of podcasts, and that's take the hassle out of the car buying experience. It's 662-257-1900, and we'll make the deal even better. Tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You'll save $500 on your new Ford.
So they were actually right on both accounts. Yesterday was a quiet period as people were leaving campus. A quiet period has one phone call per day. The dead period beginning today, unlimited phone calls. So quiet period yesterday, dead period today for the next 25 days. Still get some recruiting done, but no in-person, no visits until January 12th there. So hit a couple different things today on the show. First of a full schedule, should be here all 5 days this week, by the way. After taking a couple days for different reasons last week, one for charity. Thanks for everybody who has submitted their donations off those pledges. That's rolling around quite nicely. And we do appreciate it. That link is still up. Go give to the great people of St. Jude as we're trying to get that number up as high as possible. So last night, Neil, at the it was started by our good pastor, Eddie Rester. I put out my Christmas Story Sucks tweet and caught the wrath of Twitter last night.
You did.
I do it once a year. It's typically around this time. This is probably a couple days early, but...
Well, it was a reason for you to do it last night.
It was. They had the live version of A Christmas Story on some channel I did not watch.
I didn't either. It's so stupid. The concept is stupid. We don't... The show's already bad. We're going to be bombarded with it in a matter of days. There's no reason to add to the misery by coming up with an updated, quote, live version of the suckage.
Are you against live versions of shows on television in general? You know, Grease, they did that last year, I think.
I didn't watch it.
Because I'm a big theater guy. I love musicals and different things.
Sure.
But live on TV is a concept that falls a little flat for me in most instances.
I don't know that I've ever really watched it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a couple. They've done a few of them.
There was no chance at all that I was going to watch that. So I didn't even, like, the whole concept of it being live was completely irrelevant to me. I was not going to watch that any more than I'm going to watch it when they do the 24-hour marathon of it in a few days.
I don't know why I feel as passionately about it as I do, frankly.
Because you're right and the show sucks.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't understand how it was picked for the 24 hours. If you want to give me Christmas Vacation for 24 hours, I'm in.
Even Elf.
If you want to give me Elf, I'm in.
Give me a show that I can at least find redeeming value. Miracle on 34th Street is better than that.
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. It's pushing it, but yeah, it's better.
It's fine.
I can deal with it. The Peanuts Christmas. I could watch it over and over and over.
You're okay with them showing that 48 times or whatever it would be?
Why not? Yeah. I mean, okay. Who doesn't like Snoopy?
Yeah.
Charlie Brown. I think we all, especially us bald guys, we have a soft spot for Charlie Brown.
He's the one.
He has the one little hair.
Yeah.
On the top. But for the most part, you feel sorry for Charlie Brown. I mean, you know his life's going to suck. He's never going to be like the hot guy, and he can't. Keep pulling the ball away from him. He keeps breaking his back. But he hangs in there, sticks in there, and finds the terrible little tree. And instead of taking the big tree that everyone loves, he gets the little tree, and they love it up. And it's a great story. Who doesn't like that story?
Instead, somehow it becomes A Christmas Story as the focal point. Is it TNT that does it? TBS, TNT? 24 hours around Christmas, and it is... It is cliche. It is boring. It takes every single little Christmas gimmick of like what a kid believes and puts it into a movie. I just don't find much of a redeeming quality with this movie. It's mostly the pacing, frankly. It runs so slow for me. When I've tried to watch it, I get there's the climax of confronting the kid and all that stuff, but it's all about wish fulfillment, but without really even like that whimsical quality, Neil. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Instead, it just kind of falls flat. I mean, to the point of, frankly, I'd rather my eye be shot out than watch it. So it's. I know I'm going to get hated, but I feel very strongly about this. I don't understand how that became in the Christmas canon of movies.
Again, it would be a better podcast if I could sit here and tell you you're wrong and then have a debate about it.
I think Jeffrey likes this movie.
No, he hates it, I think.
Oh, does he hate it too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, there's unanimity.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that Eddie likes it.
Really?
Yeah, a little bit.
The people that like it say that it fulfills what they remember in a movie thing of you're being so focused around one gift at Christmas and a child's mentality of this is the only thing that matters and this is what we get up for in the morning.
Because of the gun?
Yeah, it was all about, hey, we're doing this.
What was it called? A red something.
Rider,
Red Rider. That sounds right. I guess. And they have the meal, and he gets out. And...
But even that's cliche. You're in the meatloaf every night. Like, I just... I make a point of not watching it, and I upset people when I do that. Like, I think people get physically upset at me for hating this movie.
You hate it more than I hate it. I'm just not going to watch it.
Well, if it was just a movie, I mean, there's no reason I'd pick on it. I pick on it because we get 24 hours of it. You took a bad movie and then said, I'm going to play it for one day straight. And clearly a lot of people are watching it because otherwise they'd stop doing it. I mean, they're trying to make money. It's capitalism.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So tons of people are watching this thing over and over and over and over again, I guess. But
what a depressing way to spend your Christmas. Christmas can be, okay, here comes the hot take.
Yeah.
Put on your mitts. Christmas Day itself can be a depressing day.
Elaborate.
Well, there's the build up to Christmas and the gift giving, and like the Christmas Eve service is a cool service.
It is, yes.
The candle lights and stuff. I mean, you can almost kind of get emotional in that service. And then, I mean, I've started getting emotional in that service for no particular reason. Just, and then, you know, you do the Christmas Eve dinner with your family or whatnot. And then when you were a kid, it was hard to sleep that night. You had all these strategies for how you'd get through the night.
Yeah.
And then you wake up.
What is the acceptable hour that I can wake up and go downstairs?
Well, you're 2 or 3 years away from, maybe not even that far. You might be 1 to 2 years away from her wanting to run down or run down the hall or down the steps or whatever the
mechanism is.
The mechanism of your home at that particular time is to see what Santa Claus has brought. And getting her to wait until, say, 7 a.m. will be an act of physical impossibility. And then when they're at my kid's age, they'll sleep till 7, get up at 8, whatever.
Whatever.
But you're approaching that point where Santa Claus has come in the middle of the night. He has unloaded his bag of goodies and left to go to the next home. And when you come down and you see and all that, and it's like 6:30 in the morning, you're done. You're done. I mean, it's just something.
Yeah, you'll have family dinners later in the day and that kind of thing. But
I can remember my dad used to say, "Well, Christmas is over." It'd be like 7:30 in the morning, and I thought, "Yeah, it kind of is." Well, like, that was always kind of sad.
I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. It could go a lot of different ways depending on your context and your personal life, frankly. Christmas is more of a season than a day. You know, we talk about, is this a holiday? Is this a whatever? Christmas is a season. You've got all the parties. You've got all the stuff. It's the music starting way too early on the radio. It's all those things that encapsulate what an American Christmas is, and maybe other countries too. I don't know. I've never been there. But the day itself is almost a release. You're just trying to almost decompress from the season in a way. And probably that's probably not a good thing, probably an inaccurate or a bad thing, but it's kind of the way it is. You open all the presents in the morning with the kids, and then you probably got to go to some family thing that night. But by that point, you're kind of just tired and going, okay, that's done. Kind of wondering if you should look at the credit card statement or not for what that last 25 days was like. For me at least, it's about a 15 to 20 day season where I kind of my mood almost is in maybe a better place from a Christmas spirit standpoint a week out from Christmas than it necessarily is Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And then it just sort of air out of a balloon the rest of the time for me at least. So I don't know, observation. Anyway, shows. I would like them to show some other movie. That was the point of that. You can go. I mean, what is that? Was it the Santa Claus movie that was pretty good? Like with Dudley Moore back in the day. That's not bad. It's
and
okay.
The Tim Allen Santa Claus movie, as corny as it is doable. It's survivable as a film. It. You probably need a glass of wine or a big thing of whiskey to get through it, but it's okay.
But see, that's one where if it was dropped down your throat 24 hours straight, you would hate it.
Well, for sure.
You would grow negative by that with it being the marathon movie.
There are really only two Christmas movies that come to the top of my head that I could say you could put them on 24-hour cycles and I could endure it.
It's Christmas Vacation and Elf.
Yes. in that order.
See, I kind of like Miracle on 34th Street as the option. A little older, classic.
And you could make, see, here would be the better idea. Rotate three movies.
2 hours, 2 hours, two,
2 hours. 2 hours, 2 hours, 2 hours, 2 hours, 2 hours. Yeah, exactly. Do it 48 hours. That way everybody gets their fill.
Your biggest internet typo, not typo, error is loose and lose, is it not?
Drives me nuts.
Is that your worst one?
Yeah, I hate it.
Okay. I have one that is holiday themed that bugs me more than any of those, and it's talking about Santa Claus, the gift giver, with the E on the end of his name. That is mine.
Oh, yes.
Claus, C-L-A-U-S-E.
And you have to leave the E off because it's
That's
Santa.
The movie, because it was a clause in a contract.
Right.
But that confuses a lot of people, and now Santa Claus, in a lot of instances, is spelled with an E at the end. Speaking of the big jolly fat man.
This is true.
Anyway, Chris Kringle has K's too, right?
Chris Kringle has K's, yes.
K-R-I-N-G-L-E.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, sorry.
Are you finished with your Christmas shopping? Are you done?
Three gifts left.
Okay.
I talked about it last night. Three gifts left. So close.
That's close.
Feel good about it.
Yeah, you've made it to the home stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of online shopping.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Almost all. Very little shopping that was not online at this point. So, all right. So basketball, you talked about a little intent thoughts. You and I discussed it the night it happens. Ole Miss loses another game, and a game where, when it was over, there was no mince of words. Andy Kennedy taking full responsibility for where that program and that team is at the moment.
We got to give Andy credit for this. There is no excuse making, ever. He's not going to throw players under the bus, not by name, and he didn't. He's not going to do it privately either. He's going to own it. I think he's surprised that this team is struggling with decision-making the way that it is. Having opportunities to put games away, and they make the absolute worst decisions in those moments. I think it blows him away. He's right when he says that this team is right there. This team, you could change very little, Chase, and they're 8-2. And in great shape.
But
two games in a row, they've gotten great play out of Bruce Stevens. Been terrific offensively, which leads me to my point about this team. It's people keep talking about offense. I don't know why. They're scoring points. They didn't lose to South Dakota State, Virginia Tech, or Illinois State because of a lack of offense. Now, they are dependent on the three. So are a lot of teams. But Ole Miss scored 97 points the other day. Ole Miss scored 90-something points against South Dakota State. It's not offense. They can't get a big stop. They can't get a big rebound. Their inability to win 50-50 balls is, as Andy said, that's probably the hardest thing for him. Trying to coach effort.
That's effort. 50-50 balls are effort. Rebounding is effort.
If you have to coach effort, you're screwed.
His quote, disaster, this is a disaster and I'm responsible for it. Then going on to say, it's embarrassing for me, a man who's put so much into this program, to have to coach effort. It's ridiculous, but I'm coaching it every single day, and it's the reason we're sitting here at 5-5.
He's right. It has to be frustrating for him. It has to be so frustrating because this team should be better than this. They should be 8-2, really, but they're not. And so they put themselves in a position where
it would take a miracle.
Well, it's going to take a monumental run in league play. 14-15 SEC wins.
And you see no evidence of that being possible.
I mean, the league is good. The league has good teams.
Auburn beats Middle the other day.
I mean, you know, I mean, is there a path? People go, is there a path? Well, yeah, but it's not realistic.
Also, a team that appears to be, or Andy's saying, fractured, and as the days build, the undercurrent of what we all know is the situation off the court is evident too. So, I mean, it's everything built into one right here.
Yeah, and I look, I've said this before. I've covered a lot of people. I've covered Auburn as a beat for six seasons. I basically covered Alabama as a beat for a season. I've covered LSU as a quasi-beat. And obviously I've covered Ole Miss now for 10 seasons. So covered a lot of people. I've never covered anybody that's more easy to cover from a journalism standpoint than Andy Kennedy. And so when people go, you guys just don't want Andy to get fired. No, I don't like anybody to get fired. I didn't take pleasure in Houston Nutt getting fired. And Houston Nutt did not like me. It's still a person. Getting fired sucks. He's a family. But when Andy said, sure, look, twofold. You can vouch for this. Because you're a baseball guy. You always kind of wanted to go to Omaha to see it. Well, the way for you to get to Omaha to kind of check it out and see what it was all about was for the team that you covered to get there.
Yeah.
I love basketball. It's my thing. I suck at it. I was never good at it, but I've always loved it. It's my favorite game. And there's nothing like tournament basketball from an atmospheric standpoint. I saw where Dylan said that one day on Twitter about SMU basketball, that there's nothing like...
Yeah, they were playing USC that night in Highland Park.
There's nothing in sports that really matches. Football, because of the size of venue, can't match this. Baseball, because of the way the game is played from a pace standpoint, can't match this. The only thing that's ever matched it to me was
hockey.
Playoff hockey.
Yeah, it's hockey.
There's nothing like the intimacy of a basketball/hockey arena at a high-level game. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like it. You don't have to love basketball to appreciate that. I love basketball. That's what I love about it. And so for me to get to cover the NCAA tournament, I need Ole Miss to make it. So people go, you hate Ole Miss? No, I have to be careful not to cheer. Not from a I love the Rebels kind of thing, but from a this team winning means I get to go to the tournament.
Yeah.
I get to go. I love the tournament. The tournament's cool. I don't watch a lot of college basketball all year long, but I watch the tournament. It's fun.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I mean, I want to see them do well. I like Andy. I'd like to see Andy do well. I think Andy's done a really good job here. But you're right. It's going to become an underlying thing. It's going to become a topic. It's unavoidable. Unless Vitter and or Bjork come out and say, Andy Kennedy will be the coach here next year no matter what, this is going to become a topic. And it's going to be one of those stories that everyone except Andy will dance around. And I can tell you Andy's answer. I work at the leisure of the university. I'm the basketball coach until they tell me I'm not the basketball coach. It's their call, essentially.
Good enough.
So it's going to come up. You're going to start hearing names. Like I said this in 10 Thoughts, I'll say it one time here and then I'm done with it. The people who mentioned Mike White, Mike White's not leaving Florida to take the Ole Miss job. Mike White's only leaving Florida to take a handful of jobs, in my opinion. NC, Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, an NBA job. That's it. Mike White's not leaving a high-level Nike job for a low-level Nike job. Mike White's not leaving a program that has won national titles and is a perennial NCAA tournament team for one that, as he knows well, has a hard time getting to the tournament. He's not leaving a program where you can recruit really high-level players for one where it's very difficult to recruit high-level players. He's not doing it. It would be insane. Mike's not going to do it. It's my educated opinion that a few years ago when Andy was in trouble, the year that Ole Miss won the SEC tournament, that Mike White was not leaving Louisiana Tech for Ole Miss. He's not leaving Florida for Ole Miss. The people that do that story are either doing it because they know it's going to click, they're going to get clicks, or they're doing it because they just love Ole Miss so much that they're blinded by logic. So I'm done with the Mike White portion of the story, effective now.
It's a good time to tell you that the podcast brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Settle County, and Chattanooga, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast, and all underwriting processing is done in Memphis. So you're getting local underwriting that understands your market, also a leader in condo financing in Oxford. So check out the flow down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate. You can find Jason Lowe at 662-234-2704. Or JLOWE, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com.
As Chase mentioned, my 10-weekend thoughts are up on the site. They're brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX legacy realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. It's harryalexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you are looking for. And then send him an email. It's updated daily. The site is, send him an email, and he'll get right on it. Make sure you get a deal that you're happy with both now and down the road. It's harryalexander.com, H-A at harryalexander.com. The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. It's the place to go for all of your Nissan needs. You want a new, a previously owned, a lease deal. Go to Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Everybody knows State Farm for being the number one insurer in auto, home, and life insurance. But did you know State Farm has a bank which allows them to do auto financing? Recently, State Farm has had a rate reduction in their commercial insurance rates. Give Romero Miller State Farm a chance to compare your business insurance policies. If you own a rental property, Romero challenges you to give him a shot at that property. You won't be sorry. If you need another reason to give him a call, go to Google, read Romero Miller State Farm reviews, and then call Romero Miller State Farm for all of your insurance needs in Mississippi and Tennessee, 662-893-1212.
So Ole Miss returns tomorrow night. They play Texas A&M Corpus Christi, the Islanders, as we mentioned on the previous podcast, then Bradley, and then a 9-day break prior to the opening of conference play where they get the South Carolina Gamecocks on New Year's Eve in Oxford at 5 p.m. So that is the upcoming schedule. At this point, again, it's just it's running through a gamut of league games, or it is what it is with this team as we're moving into tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. I mean, it's just not a lot of drama at this point. If they're going to get on the bubble, then they're going to have to win a whole bunch of games. And if they do that, then it's a different discussion. I don't know that any of the losses – Illinois State's a bad loss. South Dakota State, from a loss standpoint, is not going to kill them if we were to have this conversation. Middle Tennessee's not going to hurt them at all. Utah probably isn't going to hurt them from a loss standpoint. But at some point, they got to get wins. They got to go to Texas still. You can't lose six non-league games.
Well, you couldn't lose five, though. I mean, no, you know what I mean?
No, it's realistically, people. I had someone ask me, what's the number they have to get to? I'm like, I don't know, 14-4? And I mean, you believe in that? I mean, if you believe in that, then you're an optimist. God bless you.
They're 186 in KenPom adjusted defense today.
I'm surprised they're that high.
Yeah.
So we're killing a kill at end of the – where are they on offense, out of curiosity?
44.
Yeah, they're okay. Defense killing them.
Yeah. Adjusted offense is 112.6, 44th. Adjusted defense, 105.1, 186.
Yeah.
KenPom
is projecting 4-14.
I think so. I want to look at it in a second. They KenPom does a thing where they project every win and loss, and then they also give a total because obviously it's not going to go chalk. And, yeah, they were, as of right now, it was projecting somewhere around that 4-14, 5-13 mark in the SEC. I'll look at it in a second, but. Not good for sure. So that's where it's at. I don't know. Kentucky won a shootout against Virginia Tech. The SEC didn't have a great weekend. That was maybe the highlight. Florida's been a little weird lately, but Auburn with the big win against Middle in Birmingham was kind of the highlight of Saturday, just from a standpoint of a lesser team getting a top RPI win for the conference.
Yeah, you're giving me the go on. I don't have a lot to add to it. It's one of those. I'll be honest, I'm kind of baffled. But I thought they would get more out of Olenichuk than they've gotten. They haven't gotten much of anything out of him. But I thought their guard play would be better. I thought Terrence Davis's game, from a mental standpoint, would take a jump. It hasn't. I thought Bree and Tyree would be more consistent than he's been. I thought Markelle Crawford would have more of an impact than he's had. They've gotten a lot out of DeAndre Burnett, frankly. He's played well.
So, as of this morning, KenPom is predicting 13-18, 6-12 in the SEC. As of right now, where this thing gets weird for Ole Miss is that, again, you got to understand KenPom. They give you the overall record they expect, and then they go down and put a percentage on every game. And that doesn't necessarily match up to the overall. It's a different deal.
Right.
On the overall, though,
because predicting 18 games is impossible.
But in saying that, just for the sake of the podcast, they have them beating A&M Corpus Christi 79-65, beating Bradley 72-67, giving them 91% and 68% of the chances of those games.
Okay.
And then they have them going, if you went strictly by the W and L next to each game, again, 6-12 is what they're predicting, but next to each game, it has them going 2-16 in the league. It has them likely to beat Mississippi State at home, and even that's only 54% chance. And then has them winning the season finale against Vanderbilt, giving them a 61% chance. Has them on a game-by-game basis losing every other game in league play. And now, look, that's not going to happen. I'm just making the point is that from a metric standpoint right now, they're not in a good place. That's the point
of this. They're not. No, because when you can't play defense, you're not good. When you can't play defense, you have to shoot the lights out to overcome it, and you're not going to shoot the lights out night in and night out. No team does.
It's even giving South Carolina the small edge in Oxford on New Year's Eve.
By the way, why are they playing that game on a Sunday night on New Year's Eve?
I guess the hope is you play it at 5 o'clock, getting people before they go anywhere, but that's not going to happen.
But the two national semifinals are that day, right?
I'm assuming it's a TV game.
When are the national semifinal games? Are they New Year's Day or New Year's Eve?
Actually, I think they're New Year's Day because, you know, the Sugar Bowl demands they play the night game on New Year's Day. That's their thing.
Okay.
So I think it's actually New Year's Day this year.
So maybe that's what they're hoping for, is that they get some New Year's Eve stuff. New Year's Eve being on a Sunday is kind of odd.
Really?
Well, I bet a lot of restaurants and stuff like in towns like Oxford are going to be closed.
They'll open for New Year's Eve.
You think?
Yeah, you can't. They'll do the whole set menu thing. You can't. Nah.
I think I've already heard of a couple that are closed.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got January 1st. The Rose Bowl is at either 4 or 5 o'clock. I don't know what time zone's looking at here. And then the Sugar Bowl's after that. It's around 7:30, 8:30, somewhere there.
Okay.
So, New Year's Day for those two games. Yeah, the Sugar Bowl's got a thing. They play New Year's night. New Year's Day night.
And the Rose Bowl has a thing about playing that day game on New Year's Day, that late afternoon game.
Yeah, you know, like the peach and the orange and people, you can probably go, hey, look, you're in this thing, so shut up.
Yeah.
You're in the rotation. You're going to play when we tell you.
We were kind of thinking maybe you would play at noon, you know, because that would make some sense for us. And they were like, okay, well, whatever.
The Rose and the Sugar is a little more likely to give you a finger at times when you tell them where they're going with their
The Sugar Bowl has a really inflated view of itself.
I doubt it at the negotiating table is the one that is a real good arbiter that gives and gives and gives before they get. I think the Sugar Bowl is probably a very selfish lover, if I haven't had a feeling.
Speaking of, how about those Carolina Panthers, huh?
Do they stay in Carolina, you think?
I don't know.
I mean, there's no way to know.
There's no way to know, but you gotta think that's in play, right? What a story. Did you read that story?
Yeah.
Jeans Day. Who in their right mind? This is what blows me away, man. It blows me away. I'm a guy.
Okay.
I mean, I get that looking at attractive women in tight jeans
is pleasurable. I get it. But who in their right mind would walk into a room and tell their employees on Jeans Day to stand up and turn around so they could admire their backside? No joke. Who in their right mind would do that?
Show me how you have to wiggle to get in those.
And then make comment. Oh, my God. I mean, that is unbelievable. I mean, I was reading it and just thinking. What I was thinking to myself is, how? Who in the world? I mean, it's unreal. Just blew me away. It really did. I read the story and was, I thought to myself, he's not going to make the day. And he didn't.
No, he didn't make the hour.
He didn't make it. I felt so bad for Ron Rivera yesterday because he had to do a pregame interview. And they're asking him all these questions. And he's going, you can tell that he had sat down with their media people. And what do I say? Help me.
Please just ask me about Cam Newton. Please just ask me about Cam Newton.
He's saying it's an ongoing investigation, so we can't address it. I've just told the players that. Yeah, and you can tell the reporters got the producer in her ear. Ask it again. You know, and they do it, and it's just on. And it was awful. It was painful. And because I could relate to both people doing the conversation. And you know that as soon as it was finished, she looked at him and she said, I'm so sorry. And he goes, no, I get it. You know it. That was the deal. It was, we're suffering through this together on live television because Mr. likes to look at butts in tight jeans. And the massage, who goes up to their employees and gives them massages where your hands linger below the belt or where your hands linger anywhere? Who does that?
Or just gives massages, period.
Period. I've got,
go ahead.
I don't have creep in me. I don't. I've got a lot wrong with me. I got more flaws than I know how to speak of. And but that's not one. That's not one. I don't have creep in me like that. I'll give myself that. I won't give myself much. But I'll give myself that. I don't have creep in me. I'm surprised, Chase, that story went as long as that happened for as long as it did without. Oh, I guess it happened because he kept buying people silence.
Typically, that's the.
It's a lot of bought silence. From the sounds of it, we're talking about multiple people having their silence purchased in writing. Here's the money. You have to sign a contract. On a day that they won to go, what, 10-4?
Yeah, they don't lose. No NFC team loses. This is getting incredibly frustrating as we move toward the
Saints and Panthers still play each other another time,
no,
right?
No, the Saints have already beat the Panthers twice.
Okay, so they own the tiebreaker there, so yeah. They're not worried about the Panthers.
No, now the Falcons next week.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting game.
Yeah, a little bit. The good news for the Saints is the Panthers play the Falcons in Week 17.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to beat somebody.
Saints? Oh, Panthers and Falcons play us.
Yeah.
I know we're going to jump around to other things. I'm just curious.
You're fine.
Your thoughts on the two big calls? I didn't get into the second one because I didn't see it. I was watching Patriots Steelers, and that's a catch.
No, it's not.
It is.
He didn't catch it through the ground, knocked
but
the ball
he crossed
out.
The plane with it.
You got to catch the ball.
I hate that rule.
You've got to catch
the
ball.
Here's what I hate about the rule. When you watch it, and I'm not a Steelers fan. I'm not a Patriots fan. I don't care about either team. But when I watch that play, I go touchdown.
That was one of the few ones where I kind of looked at it and didn't argue and thought they completely got the right call and said, okay.
Well, I think they probably got the right call by the letter of the rules, but they got to rewrite the rule. If it looks like a catch.
So you think as long as the ball is in their hands to some degree crossing the line, it really doesn't matter what happens after that?
Yeah, because if you're a running back, and the ball crosses the plane.
But you've already secured possession of the ball. They handed it to you, and you ran in with it.
See, I would argue that he had possession of the ball when it crossed the plane.
I mean, I get it, because in theory, the way before the catch rule, the rule was once that ball crosses, action is over.
Yes.
Nothing exists past
right.
that point.
Right.
But when, see, my eye test was different. When I watched it from an eye test, I went, oh, well, the ball came out. Okay. Drop pass.
Yeah, see, I watched it and thought he caught the ball. And then the other one, I don't understand why the NFL in this day and age.
About the fumble? What are we talking about?
The first down marker.
Oh, yeah.
Use lasers. You don't need the damn chains anymore.
Still think they got it right, but.
Probably did, but take the doubt away. You don't need chain gangs anymore.
You just run GPS under the field or however that works. And
yeah, it's ways to do it. And put a communication piece on the referee or the umpire, whoever places the ball, that says it's a first down. The ball is at the 34-and-a-quarter-yard line. It's a first down. And then the other one, the Thomas Davis hit. Thomas Davis' season has to end. Those hits can't happen in football anymore. Those are the hits that are going to kill the game. Those hits have to go away, and there's only one way to do it, and that's to punish the player.
Hard.
You've got to send a clear message that kind of hit. I'm not talking about the accidental targeting hit where I'm kind of with some of the old get-off-my-lawn people on, hey, football's got some violence to it, where the guy kind of drops at the last minute and ends up. The two things that have to happen are players who lead with their helmets. Those people are going to have to be punished.
The ones that launch.
Yes. And then when you launch head-to-head where you are clearly trying to injure someone, those hits have to be adjudicated out of the game. Suspend someone for a season. Send a message around the league. You won't get paid for a year. And it'll stop. That can't happen. Where young people see that and go, yeah, you can't play like that. That can't be cool.
You're 100% right. My head, though, goes, oh, God, the slippery slope that's coming when we do that.
It is.
On the one that's kind of accidental, you know what I mean? You start getting into intent at that point.
But you know the eye test you see a launch and when you see what appears to be an accident.
Like, what was it back in the day? The what is porn? Well, I know it when I see it. I don't know how to describe it, but I know it when I see it. Yeah.
You know when it crosses the line. Thomas Davis crossed the line, and everyone who saw it could see it yesterday. You can't do that.
Yeah, the Eagles survived the Giants yesterday. The Vikings win big.
The Eagles aren't going to
play like
the
crap, but win.
Saints had a hangover and won. Had some turnovers that kept the game going.
The Rams beat the hell out of Seattle in Seattle last night.
Well, they're interesting. The Vikings are interesting.
I worry still about their quarterback play, but yes.
Yeah. I'm with you.
They're 11-3. And then Carolina doesn't lose. Atlanta plays tonight. They're going to win.
When Cam's good, Carolina's really good.
And then Detroit's a little out right now. Seattle's a game out. And then on down. There's that group of Rams, Saints, and Panthers are four losses altogether. And they all have a two-game cushion with two to go.
The NFC playoffs are going to be great.
And a couple really good teams are getting left out.
Yeah. And the AFC playoffs are not going to be great.
If it were today, the Eagles and Vikings get byes, the Rams would open against the Falcons in L.A., and the Saints would host the Carolina Panthers.
Oof.
Trying to beat them the third time in a
row. That's tough. Although I would like the Saints in that game.
I'd like Detroit to get in and play – Detroit.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'd like. I don't want anything to do with the Falcons, and I really don't want the Panthers again either. So
the Vikings have benefited from a poor division.
In the AFC, the Patriots and the Steelers are the bye teams. The Jaguars would host the Bills, And the Chiefs would host the Titans as of right now.
Yeah, see, that's not very appealing.
The other's really appealing.
The NFC is wild.
Yeah.
Because all of the teams that you just named, I could make a case for, oh, they could win. Mm-hmm. Rams.
Well, yeah, the team you don't like right now is the team with the one seed.
Yeah, I don't like their chances.
Podcast brought to you in part by Tyson Drugs, TysonDrugs.com. Go get your Sildenafil. It's a $10 version of that $50 or $60 little blue pill. Get you ready in as little as 15 minutes, same length of effectiveness as those other guys. You can take the tablet, you can break it into half, a quarter, or take the entire pill. 662-252-2321 or go to TysonDrugs.com. Give them your doctor's name when you fill out the form. And they will deliver the medicine to you if you are not local. Again, 662-252-2321.
The podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high-ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, that kind of thing, Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application with rates as low as 4.9%. Terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben, 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. The podcast also brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website at msbnkr.com or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Superlawyers only selects the top 5% of lawyers in the state. Gambrell & Associates handles Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford, 662-281-8800.
So Ole Miss over on a Friday afternoon gets a commitment from 2019 athlete Jackson Prep, two sports star Jerrion Ealy. He commits in football, plans to play baseball if he does show up in college. Here's kind of the deal on Ealy. As of right now, he's the number 7 overall prospect in the 2019 baseball class. He's the number 2 outfielder in the country for 2019. He is very, very, very fast. He was clocked by in a perfect game event running a 6.36 60-yard dash. That is 2/100 of a second faster than Cinquez Golson ran his 60-yard dash by comparison. He's good. I do not expect him to show up and play college sports. I think he'll go in the draft, barring injury. I think Joe Gray out of Hattiesburg has a better chance of showing up than Ealy does. Gray's in the 18 class and is a top 10 prospect. He's a Boris client. There's just a little more intricacy there. Look, I've said this with a lot of kids. I'm going to say it probably as long as I cover this sport. Jerrion Ealy is a lottery ticket. If he shows, it is fantastic for the Rebels. If he's got to go and maybe play somewhere, you'd much rather have that ticket than somebody you're going to play having that ticket. So Ole Miss gets that. They get the promotion out of him being committed. They get the publicity. They get the ranking spots. And then you see whether it actually translates into something tangible. And if he shows up in a couple years, I get asked a lot, well, could he do the A.J. Brown thing? Fringe prospects are the ones more likely to get those type of deals because – the clubs see those kind of guys as lottery tickets. Well, if football doesn't work out, yep, we've got him, we've got an athlete, whatever.
Yep.
But Ealy is likely going to command a 7-figure contract. They're not giving up 3 or 4 years of development on a deal that substantial. So, no, the big-time prospects are typically not eligible for the type of two-sport things that like AJ, like Russell Wilson, like some other guys have had.
Yeah, the Padres deal with AJ is absolutely a lottery ticket. You know, it's not really affecting their bottom line. They stopped in the store to get a soda and a pack of crackers, and they said, yeah, why not? I'll buy a couple of tickets to the lottery. Probably not going to win. Almost certainly not going to win, but, you know, crazier things, dot, dot, dot. That's what happens with him. They know he's going to play in the NFL. They're just, what if football doesn't quite go the way that he wants to go, or he has a wild hair? Great athlete. Roll the dice on him. But no, this is like the Blue Jays with Anthony Alford, where they finally were like, look, man, do you want to play in the bigs? Because if you want to play in the bigs, we got to get you into a system. You got to get at-bats.
Alford was about as good of a prospect can be and still get that deal.
Right.
He was right there on the edge, probably where they went, dang, I don't know, but okay, whatever. Yeah.
And this guy's tools, he has all the tools. I mean, his first-round pick tools.
So
if you're going to be a first-round pick, you're not letting him go play college football.
Yeah, go get hit by 240-pound linebackers for 3 years.
Well, I mean, it's going to be – you and I talked about this yesterday. It's pick a team, Milwaukee, for Jonathan Randolph's sake. The Brewers, they take a kid like that in the first round. Their deal is, hey, let's get you to Arizona. Let's do some developmental league stuff where they can put you on a field and go, today you're going to get 7 at-bats. Because you're going to lead off every inning. Because that's how they play the games. The games aren't real baseball. It's, hey, you're going to lead off the first, and guess what? You're leading off the second, too, because we want to get you that at-bat. And they work on swings, and they're telling them, we don't care about your results. We don't care at all right now about your results. We're not even keeping up with your results. And they're developing him as a player, and then they want to send him to A-ball and work his way up. We're hopefully, for their sake, at 21, 22, he's ready to impact at the major league level. Well, you can't do that if you're playing football. It's not possible. And in football, you separate a shoulder, and now maybe you lose some of the tools. No, he's going to play major league baseball. He's going to be play professional baseball, I should say. The odds of him arriving on campus are really, 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 really slim if the people that I've talked to are accurate. But it's, if you're Ole Miss, you'd rather own the lottery ticket than Alabama own it.
Yeah.
And then if it happens to change where he goes, I just want to play football. Great. But you sign him knowing that's probably not going to be one of our guys.
And that's okay.
He's and you also somewhere. Build that relationship where if he gets to baseball and plays 3 years of baseball and either decides I don't like this or I can't hit the curve.
Yeah.
Charlie, the great equalizer. And then, he comes back and he goes, that's my connection. I want to play college football. Well, he hadn't started his clock. He can play college football at 21 as a freshman.
Chris Winkie.
Yeah. So it's all good. If you're Ole Miss, it's a gamble that you absolutely take. But for the people who expect this to end up with him playing football at Ole Miss in the fall of 2019, you're probably going to be disappointed.
Yeah, looking at it here, he is, from all perfect game registered people last year, his 6.36 is the 99.96 percentile for the prospects.
That's pretty good.
His outfield velocity, grabbing the ball and throwing it in from the outfield, was clocked at 92 miles an hour. That is in the 97.95 percentile. And the only thing that was even below anything close was exit velocity on his bat. He's not a power hitter.
Right.
Was 89%, which is 89 miles an hour, which was in the 89th percentile for his.
So even in that, he's launching the ball.
Yeah.
But his deal is going to be put it in play and run.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some first baseman from Florida that's doing a much higher exit velocity on that category. But
they view him as a guy that play probably, what, center field?
Well, he can run. Yeah, you would hope that if his jumps are just okay, he could stick in center. Would be the hope. I mean, I'm looking at it here. Primary outfielder, good energy moving toward the ball with quick footwork, which is sound through release. Big arm strength, plays well, solid carry out of hand and accuracy to the bag. Projects to stay. I'm reading Perfect Game here. They think he can hit enough to potentially play right field.
Oh, wow!
On a team with elite center field tools.
Wow.
Yeah.
Play professional baseball. You're not going to go risk those tools on a football field.
The only knock on him from a prospect is he's right-handed.
Yeah. You'd prefer that he be a left-handed guy, but with that kind of
speed.
I'm
nitpicking at this point.
Yeah.
He's qualified, fine, 3.0 GPA, 21 ACT to this point, reading from his page.
So. And for the people that say, well, he could play both sports, he could. You don't see that very much for a reason. And then the other part of that is that when you play college baseball, because as you know, everyone's hung up on wins and losses at the college game, there's not as much time for development. Truth is, on a college team, at least his first year or so, he would be behind. He would miss all of the spring, all of the fall. He would be behind. For a Mike Bianco or any other college coach, yeah, the tools would be intriguing, but you don't have a lot of time to develop it, and you can't afford to do what the rookie ball coach at Arizona, where the team might go 40 and 100, and the manager gets a promotion because, yeah, you developed those dudes.
Yeah, the single-A manager is not going to bed at night worried about whether he won or lost that game.
It's all about development. Yeah. Literally, the big club has rules. I want him to pitch 55 pitches. I want him to throw 80% fastballs. I want him out after 55 pitches. Stuff like that. That's the stuff that an A-ball guy is managing. He's not really managing wins and losses much. I mean, they prefer to win because winning is like better than losing. But that's not the point. If you go to enough minor league baseball, you'll see a manager come out, one out, nobody on in the fourth, one ball, one strike, given the hook, and you're like, what the? The big league club had him at 60 pitches.
He's at 60 pitches.
And that was pitch number 60, and he's out. Because if he throws a 61st pitch, there's a decent chance he's losing his gig. And you'll see also stuff at the minor league level. You'll see a guy throwing an inordinate amount of curveballs on a night. And this is, hey, what we're going to work on tonight is on a night when you don't have your command and you've got to lean on these pitches, this is what you're going to do. Or, especially early in a season, we're only going to let you throw 5 curveballs tonight. And you'll see a guy just throwing fastballs and getting rocked and no one seems to care.
Yeah,
the hitters know fastball's coming. But they're working on development. It's just a total different deal. I go to minor league games where you'll see a guy throw nothing but fastball changeup. Fastball changeup. No off-speed stuff that night.
I saw just the headline. Didn't read the story, but it looks like Otani is going to have 2 different profiles in fantasy baseball, by the way. We said that last week.
He is. Yeah, he's going to be 2 different players.
You can get the pitcher and the hitter.
Yeah.
So that's probably the best workaround.
Is, and from the sounds of it, it might be doing more hitting than pitching.
UCL trouble.
Might not matter.
Have we heard a prognosis?
Not yet. They think he could maybe work through it. It's got damage.
They all have damage. It's the amount of amount of damage. It's an inordinate amount of
there's
damage.
There's a tear.
Yeah, right.
Not fraying, but a tear.
Yeah. That's what I kind of learned from studying draft prospects and covering this over the years is you go, well, he had something in his shoulder, and like, yeah, they all have something in their shoulder.
Yeah, it's like John Lester has the loose body in his elbow or whatever. Yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah. Podcast brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, lawn maintenance and landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding area. You get a chance to let them fulfill your Christmas wish if you'd like to build that outdoor fence, stone patio, deck, arbor, or other outdoor living area. You can do an outdoor kitchen if you would like. They handle all my yard work, and they should handle yours too. 662-607-7773 or mastercutslawn.com for a free quote. And remember, when you sign an annual contract and it's time to get that first cut, it will be free if you mention the podcast.
Podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, ComerHeatingAndAir.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast. You get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane, 662-832-8749. The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with a live person, all without having to press 10 buttons, without a 5-minute wait. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa, and with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
So, as I said in the opener, I talked to Mets manager Mickey Callaway on Friday, former Ole Miss star. He was here 94-96. He has been in pro baseball for about 7 years now as a coach. Started out in single A with a Cleveland club, and then worked up to being under Terry Francona until now his time with the Mets. Pretty interesting story. He's funny, Neil, because you and I were talking about this a little bit on Friday night. The anticipation for him has got to be off the charts as he's starting this journey. He was telling me that he's having a hard time sleeping. He's trying to relax right now because it's such a grind from February to October or whenever your season ends, where it's just day to day, and you never kind of stop thinking, where he knows he's got to recharge a little bit. But there's going to be so many elements of what's about to happen that he's never had to deal with. He said, you know, it's holding runners, it's bunt defenses, it's handling the media. He said there's so many different things that he's going to have to kind of learn by fire in a way. Now, the positive is that they're not expected to be contenders this year. The negative is that he's in New York and everything's a big deal. So he's having quite the, I wouldn't say crisis because he's handling it pretty well, but he's trying to figure out how to spend these next 3 weeks before he gets to work.
Yeah, it's a different deal when you become a major league manager. When you're a pitching coach, you work with a segment of the team. When you're a manager, you work in every element. It's like being for Matt Luke, the change from being an offensive line coach to the head coach is night and day. You're not just focused on one room anymore. You're focused on an entire program. He's going from dealing with Cleveland media occasionally to New York media daily, every single day. He's also going from dealing with the team that's been in the playoffs to a team that, I mean, they're lucky to finish third in the East?
Probably, yeah.
I mean, they're not as good as the Nationals. They're not as good as the Phillies. Maybe not as good as the Braves.
They'll beat the Marlins.
Yeah, well, you and me are better than the Marlins.
Bench coach critical for Callaway in this first season.
Yep.
He's hired Gary DeSarcina as bench coach, the former bench coach of the Boston Red Sox under Farrell.
That'll help a lot. He'll have to lean on him. And he's got a team with a lot of big power arms. Got to go. I thought it was interesting that you were saying he's going to go see everybody at their place, take kind of a world tour in the month of January.
Yeah,
touch base with people.
Yeah, he's getting on the road in January, and he's doing, I mean, for lack of a better term, in-home visits with all of his players before they report to Port St. Lucie in February. So he's going to be on the road 20, 25 days, whatever it is. Just how's your throwing program? What's going on? Probably eating a few casseroles to get made here or there. Probably as close to baseball people get to the in-home visit, I would assume.
Probably so. And just,
this is who I am. Who are you?
Let's have a conversation so that it's not so awkward when we get together in February at Port St. Lucie.
Yeah.
It'll still be awkward. But baseball, it's a nomadic sport. People know going in you're going to have turnover. There's going to be change. Thought it was interesting. Inside that same division, Anthony Rendon of the Nationals was asked. He didn't go to the Nationals fan fest. He was basically asked why, and was talking about the managerial change, getting rid of Dusty Baker. And he said, I don't know, I've gotten used to it. I've been here, what, 5-6 years, 3 or 4 managers? It was kind of like, whoa. Davey Martinez has his work cut out for him. Bryce Harper did not go to the Nationals Fan Fest.
Did he not?
He's gone.
Yeah, well, he...
Bye, Bryce.
He's gone. I don't know where he's gone, but he's gone.
If you made me pick today, I'd predict the Dodgers. Why the Braves helped the Dodgers out, I'll never understand. I resented the Braves doing that.
It was a good deal for the Braves. They got every shopping thing done in one deal.
I guess.
They cleared 19 money.
Yeah. Took the Dodgers off the hook on a lot of tax burden, though. Yeah.
Kept them out of the tax.
I wanted the Dodgers to be heavily taxed.
Does that really matter, though? They just pay the tax.
I don't want them to have a lot of free money in the next
offseason. No, you're missing a point, though. Wouldn't they just pay the tax anyway?
There is, but there does come a point with the tax where it's prohibitive. There does come a point with the tax where the ownership goes, well, you know, we would like to make money. That is the goal of the business, is to make money.
Latest mock draft has the New York Giants taking Josh Rosen with the second overall pick.
They'll definitely go quarterback. Who's going one?
They have Darnold going one.
Yeah.
I like Rosen.
I like Rosen better than Darnold. I can see why someone would like. To me, Darnold has a higher ceiling but a lower floor. Rosen has a lower ceiling but a higher floor.
Baker Mayfield, 19 to the Chargers.
Yeah. Jeffrey, if you're listening, hit the pause button. Or hit the fast-forward button. Mayfield scares me a little just because of his size. But he's good.
Yeah, it's a lot like it's human nature. I'm not really picking on anybody. It's, well, Breeze is that size. Well, we always are so close. We pick out the exception to everything when it is what it is. I mean, it's a lot like that kid from Pearl right now that just got the offer from South Alabama yesterday. He's 5'6", 5'7". And they go, well, Mike Hilton, well, so-and-so. It's like, yeah, but they're special dudes. I mean, there's a reason the stereotype is the size it is for each position.
Well, there's a reason that the Taylor Polk story was a unique story. If walk-ons everywhere became starting linebackers and big parts of teams, then that wouldn't have been a story. It'd be like, yeah, it happens everywhere. Well, it doesn't happen everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to write a profile on, hey, DeMarcus Gates played a lot of snaps.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Right. You weren't going to do a story that was, hey, guess what? DK Metcalf played a lot. Kept finding his way on the field.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did. Let's see. He's big. He's fast. He's strong. And he can catch. Amazing, ain't it?
6'5", 225, 455. Yeah.
Kind of looks like a Greek god. And he gets on the field. Go figure. No, I mean, come on. It's just 5'6" guys aren't. Don't see a lot of great running backs at 5'6". Not a lot more of those guys bust than become Darren Sproles.
Reggie Bush hanging it up. Finally said he is retiring yesterday.
Had a hell of a career.
Said he wants to retire as a Saint.
Yeah.
Won a ring.
I covered him in New Orleans. He was special.
Yeah.
He was dynamic.
I'm a little mixed on my true overall feelings about his tenure with New Orleans, but yeah, I mean.
He was special. Was it?
He was great in the playoffs that year in 09. He was great.
You had to know where he was at all times. So athletic, my God. Wasn't a pure running back or whatever, but.
Yeah, might not should have been the pick you was right there, but okay.
Maybe not.
Whatever.
He was an incredible college player.
Yeah.
An incredible college player.
They don't win the title without him.
No. No. I'll never forget him running away from Brian Urlacher at Soldier Field in the NFC Championship game and me thinking, I'm going to cover the Super Bowl.
And then?
And then the second half didn't go the right way.
That was awful. It's one of the worst five sports days of my life was that day. And it shouldn't have been because we really shouldn't have been there anyway. It was still early. The window was just opening, if it was even open yet. I mean,
a glimpse into a journalist's life that day.
Yeah.
I arrived at the stadium at least 3 hours before the game because of all the security stuff, thinking to myself, they're going to lose. I'm going to write some recap stuff, and then I'm done. Whew. They jump ahead, and I'm thinking, I'm going to get to cover the Super Bowl. And I was kind of excited. And then it got away. And honestly, I was like a little down for a few minutes. And then I thought to myself,
I'm done.
And I walked from Soldier Field in the cold back to the Marriott Marquis on Michigan Avenue or Rush, whatever it is in Chicago, downtown Chicago, kind of with a bounce in my step. I'm going home. No more 2 weeks of Saints stuff.
Yeah.
It was weird. People wonder what journalists think. That's kind of what you think about.
Yeah, we kind of had Saints parties every Sunday in college. It was a big group of us, and that was a funeral that day. Nobody was saying anything. It was just kind of passing the next drink to the next person, and we watched the entire fourth quarter just in silence. I don't think anybody said a word for about 45 minutes. It was rough.
Was it Fred Thomas who got burned a couple of times in that game? Super quiet, that locker room.
Fred Thomas, is that right?
That locker room was the quietest locker room I've ever heard in my life.
Well, it's such a weird season because you never expected any of it to begin with. And they get on the run and, you know, it just...
Never heard a locker room...
Because that group beat Philadelphia in the first round.
Beat Philly on a day where Jeff Garcia played his butt off.
Yeah, it was like 27-24.
And Deuce McAllister played great and won the game. And that place shook. It was so loud.
Well, was it the first series of that game when Bush catches that little ball out in the flats and almost gets decapitated?
I can't remember that.
He gets hammered on like the first series of that game and went, ooh. And then they ended up winning 27-24. And then they went
to Chicago.
Yeah.
Because I remember they were cheering for Arizona because Arizona would have had to come to New Orleans.
You can stay out of the cold either way. Yeah, I mean, that's...
But they went to Chicago, and that was shortly after Katrina. Because I did this story in Chicago where Chicagoans were talking about how, yeah, the Saints are a cool story, but we're sort of sick of all the Katrina stuff. We want to win, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out looking for, you know, people to talk to and ended up seeing Ryan Sandberg out, and it was cool.
Really?
Yeah.
He talked? You didn't go up to
him? I didn't try to get – I should have, but I instead it was just a pleasure to meet you.
Hope you didn't tell your editor that.
My editor was so crazy it didn't matter.
Okay. Yeah, I think probably –
I ended up having a really good story. They were, like, really pleased with the story.
Out of my five or six worst sports moments, Saints playoff losses are probably – three or four of them. I mean, yeah. On up there. I mean, I've had some rough days.
It's the worst part about your team making the playoffs
is they lose in the playoffs more often.
The high or the low is so high or so low.
At Seattle, Bears, NFC title, and then that goofy-ass game at Candlestick are by far the three that stick out in my head.
And winning the NFC title game is a bigger thrill than winning the Super Bowl, right?
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
It was a great game. God, that was a great game.
Yeah, I was a complete and utter useless nervous wreck for 4 hours in the NFC title game, and I felt like I had played when it was over. I just,
you know, what's funny is
sat there.
I was exhausted when that game ended.
We were at a buddy's house, and I didn't. Someone drove me home, and I sat in the car and just listened to WBL for a couple of hours with all the post game stuff.
Yeah,
and different
sure.
Things, and that was it. I was exhausted. I couldn't move.
Yeah.
And then the Super Bowl was just...
That was a high-level football
game.
Like
I said, with the Super Bowl, I spent a half just going, hey, I'm just kind of happy to be here. This is cool. We're here. Yeah. The window's not closing. We're
I was
good.
There with the World Series.
Fine.
Yeah, yeah. I went to
it's
a World
right.
Series loss and was fine.
Yeah, and then late when they got ahead, went, well, okay, now we're here.
Let's win.
Let's go ahead. Yeah, and then Porter grabs the ball and goes back the other way. And
did you make a fool of yourself during those moments?
You know, I was more in shock. I think I've told you the story. Like David Brandt was watching the game with us, and he was like, "Hey, I'm gonna go ahead and go." He's like, "I know it's getting kind of late, kids, whatever." And he gets back in his truck and flips it on, and he hears Porter catch the interception just as he gets back in his truck. So as we're celebrating, David like runs back in the house like a madman and is like grabbing everybody. That's the one thing I kind of remember from that
awesome.
From that moment. But Yeah, it was happy to be there until late in about the late third quarter, and then all of a sudden it's because they get the onside kick after half, you get the possession back, and Peyton's not playing that well. Like you go, well, he's got a shot here. This is kind of weird. This is so Shockey played well that day. Like it was kind of a weird deal that night. So
I forgot about Jeremy Shockey being on that team.
Yeah, he called a pass, either touchdown or something late right there, and then yeah.
What I remember at that NFC title game was, for as all the criticism that Brett Favre got, God, he was good that day. Damn near pulled it off.
Oh, he should have pulled it off through the really bad pass on the pick at the end of regulation.
Yeah, they should have had an opportunity to kick
the
field goal.
They should have kicked the field goal and won the game, frankly. Yeah. Remember, they hit him all night long. Just got killed.
To him a bunch. Because at one point they hit him and I thought they'd broken his leg.
Well, you remember the pictures going around afterwards where he took the pictures of his ankle and his knee? And it's just this purple mess all over his lower body.
He took shots. Oh, God, he got hit in that game.
Yeah.
That was the game where you went, you know, this guy, people can say what they want about him, and he was special.
Yeah, and then Garrett Hartley kicks the kick after he had sucked the last few weeks of the season. No one had any confidence whatsoever of that kick going in.
You know, it's funny. I knew that kick was going in.
Did you?
I did.
Yeah, I didn't.
It was so funny. The Saints, I like the Saints. I think if I'm a fan of a team, I'm a fan of the Saints. But I've said this before. I don't let myself be a fan because I don't think it's fair. And so I watch them and cheer for them, but I don't have quite the same emotional investment. And when he lined up to kick it, I remember saying, he's going to make this. They're going to the Super Bowl. Had no doubt. Like, literally, as the play was going, I had my hands up. I was like, yeah, they're going to the Super Bowl. I was so excited for, like, all the people that I knew who were Giant Saints fans.
Yeah, but that's what – I mean, I've got, like, all the DVDs and stuff afterwards, and that's what Peyton just walked over to him. He goes, hey, just look at that Florida Lee and hit it. And he walked off. Because they had, like, over the canopies, the Florida Lees up on right behind the net. And he just walked over to Hartley, and he goes, hey, that Florida Lee. He's like, go hit that, and we'll go celebrate. He walked off from him.
Basically hit it.
Oh, yeah. It was right.
He crushed it.
Right down the middle, 40 yards-ish.
Yeah, there's never a doubt.
Yeah, something like that. And Jim Henderson, for all of his terrible having to call bad Saints games, finally got that one. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Hell of a game.
Because, like, his favorite call of mine ever is, I don't know, we got to go, is the River City Relay. They were playing at Jacksonville that year in the last game of the regular season.
Oh, yeah.
And they do all the laterals, like 9 laterals, score the touchdown, and if they win the game, they make the playoffs. And they line up, and he gets the lateral, score the touchdown. Henderson's losing his mind and everything, and then they miss the extra point. Yeah. And he's always like, you know, Saints, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And then he just goes, and he missed it. And he's like just whispering. He goes, he missed the extra point.
Oh, God.
Just, yeah. 9 laterals. I think Joe Horn ends up scoring, and then they missed the extra point. New Orleans Saints, ladies and gentlemen. That was that. So, all right. Plenty more on the show throughout the week. We'll have some guests. We'll have some basketball, some football recruiting, and whatever else pops up. So, appreciate you hanging in with us, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.